This is the 2007 July 4th Freedom Seminar, Part 4.
Hello. I'd like to start with anything anyone would like to bring up from, you know, you must have had some thoughts since yesterday.
Of course.
And maybe little glitches. Anything?
Well, what occurred was magic yesterday. And it was like an eruption within myself at a real core level. And it just seemed all throughout the day, no matter who I ran into and interact, it was like each person was helping me put together a small piece of a puzzle within myself. And every time I talked to someone, I got clarity, a better picture, if you will. And things just magically were just coming together. And it was like that all day long.
When you leave here, you'll find the opposite.
How so?
Because the world is a bad place. There's nice people in it, but even nice people will have a bad effect on you because they're only nice on the surface. They're doing it like you did. They're compensating.
Yes.
See? So the compensator, even though they're nice and but they still have, now you'll see through it.
Yes.
You'll see through a nice person who's got something not nice in them. And every person, no matter how nice they are on the surface, has a deleterious effect. Especially if you get to know them for a long time and they grow on you. The niceness grows on you like when you get married. When you get married, why do you marry a nice person, don't you?
Right.
You marry the shell. You marry the compensation.
Oh.
And you feed yourself to the compensation. And they like it. So that's why you wake up one morning and you say, what happened to my husband? You know, what happened to my wife? Because you tend to feed each other's rotten side. And so when you feed somebody's compensation, you reward them for compensation. Elvis Presley, for example, well, he just sucked up the adoration of the crowd. He was a decent kid, but not... I always thought Elvis was a decent kid.
But he didn't
know how to handle power. And if you're a person who is a compensator, it's the stuff you want. Because you have an insecurity, you know, and you can use that insecurity to become good at something. A good scientist. A good singer, entertainer. And you become brilliant on the outside. And then or a painter, an artist, a Picasso. I don't know why anybody would like Picasso. I almost said cappuccino. He was so egotistical after a while that he could just draw some stupid thing on a napkin and it'd be worth $1 million. I mean, it's maybe a little exaggeration, but people would just want that and just frame that napkin. See, he wouldn't have to do anything. Just go. And he's got money. And this will make you tipsy. It's like an opiate. And you can't help but be encouraged by it. And so the encouragement only creates a conflict because you're not really becoming a good person. You're becoming a very dark person. And then such people, you hear about them all the time, the musicians and rock stars. What happens to them? They have an awful life. Jail, drugs, violence, murder. Can't stop themselves.
Well, you know, when I was reflecting back on my life, I could see where my compensation had blocked me all throughout my life.
Sure.
Every phase of it. And it was like, oh my gosh.
What did you compensate? So did you compensate just with a nice personality? Because I think I remember you saying that you felt talentless or something, or some word to that effect.
Talentless.
But you're not talentless. Because the talent is blocked.
The talent.
Your talent was focused into appearances.
and compensating, like trying to hide that I didn't have talent. So I was putting all this energy.
Right.
It was just a loop.
And then you get more, then you feel like a puppet on the end of a string. And you hate the people that love you.
And you start to hate hiding.
Yeah, but you also hate the people who look at you in a good light. Because they're encouraging you to be what you don't really, they're encouraging the dark side to look like a bright side.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, and education fed into that.
Yeah, what did you study? You studied something?
Education and psychology, and I taught.
Are you a psychologist?
No, I'm not a psychologist. I was a teacher for a while.
You were?
Yes.
So you have a degree in teaching?
I do.
Yeah. Well, what do you do now? How do you make a living, if I may ask?
Certainly, you may ask. And that's my dilemma. I'm not doing anything right now because I don't want to be sucked back into that 8-to-5 worldly thing. You've said for many years, be your own entrepreneur.
If you can, yes.
That's honestly.
How do you make ends meet while you're waiting for that? It seems like you need to move from what you don't like into what you do like. I didn't like diamond cutting. You know my story.
Yes.
But I didn't hate it. But the other guys hated it. You used to get irritated to function. When you don't have grace, you have to have motivation. And a motivation comes from being upset. So that's why they get upset with what they do, but then they can do it okay. But then they have to go home and pass the local pub, they have to drink. So they drink all the money away they earned in the daytime.
Roy, when you're saying this, what's occurring to me is that I'm realizing once again that my motivation was compensation. I know I've said that a zillion times, but I just keep going back to that. That was where my motivation was coming from, and that's why I really couldn't grow. That's why I couldn't really be skilled, because it was the wrong energy.
It creates an aversion to being, even though you want to be skilled at something, and then in compensation, you can become skilled. But after a while, you got two wrong options. You get glorified through being skilled and you can't stop playing the role. You can't stop being a good scientist, a good doctor,
right,
a good painter, a good anything, a good mother. But there's something wrong about the goodness because you have to cater to the worst in human nature. To get them,
speak to that.
I do see
it. As a doctor, you get trapped in the role of being a doctor instead of just being a person who does.
There you are.
Medicine. But when you leave here, you're saying you're getting, kind of validation or you're getting support from the people here.
A healing. It feels like a healing.
Maintain your objectivity. If you're learning that, like Annie is learning that, she doesn't have to be caught up with this brother-in-law psychiatrist of hers, that she can, she can be self-motivated. She doesn't have to try to get him to validate everything she does.
Right.
And if you can maintain that distance from people, you can read what people are how they're drawing you in, and you can stop it. I mean, it's an ongoing thing, and sometimes you're going to get sucked in and fail. At least I do all the time.
Right.
But you can learn. You get better at it. You get better at keeping your distance and just getting the whole picture. But
you're not aloof. You see, there's a difference between keeping a distance and being aloof. Mm-hmm. So I have a distance between. I don't know if you can feel the distance between myself and all of you.
Oh yeah.
Can you? But I'm not aloof.
Right.
You're in contact.
I'm in contact with you. I'm in contact with your soul.
Yes.
I synchronize with your soul, but not with your flesh. Well, if I want to help you, you can give me permission to say, forget that, that's not important anymore. Where once a person says you're stupid, I say, no, you're not really. So it goes together, if I may jump just tracks a little bit, because in a scripture, a man comes up to Jesus and says, Lord, I believe, but help thou my unbelief. So you got two minds. One is monkey, with all due respect. It's not really a monkey, but I call it a monkey brain. And because it's externally driven. It can be cunning. It's much far, it's more intelligent than a monkey. But I think if you gave a monkey a consciousness, he could talk to, you know, if he was a good monkey, if he tilted the consciousness in the right way, he'd be a good monkey and you could talk to him about serious things. He may not understand everything, but he would be human, basically. That's what makes us human is the side I talk to. See, I see in you a side I can really talk to for a long time. And you would talk to me for a long time. And we'd be friends. We'd be friends in the spirit. But you'd have respect for me because it's my business more than it is your business. Because you're getting well and I'm already well. You see what I mean in that sense?
Yeah.
So therefore you want some of my wellness but we still have the same mindset. So therefore I have the authority to say, stop being stupid. You really are smart. Don't believe those lies in your head. In other words, I can reach in. It's simple. I reach in and say, and neutralize what someone said to you, you couldn't get out of your head. Someone who had an authority over you, the person who had an authority over you years ago, who made you lose it, drew your consciousness into that. But my presence helps you come out of that, validates where you should be. It validates that. I say, this is the process. All you have to do is step back and you'll be that little child again, a believing child. And then I say, now I believe that there's really nothing wrong with you. It was something wrong with them, that swine. See what I mean? But don't hate him. Basically.
It's so confusing to most people.
But you understand what I just said?
Yes.
You just clarified something.
What was that?
It's a major concept in psychotherapy.
Okay.
There's something that's known as resistance, and all therapists know about it, and probably a lot of other people know about it. But people will come in for help, but then they start telling you all kinds, everything but what they need to tell you.
That's right.
And that's called resistance.
Yeah.
But I think you just simplified it. And in other words, if your little child or your soul talks to his little child or his soul, then the resistance is gone. That's the other side.
Because his soul is resisting, he's trying to resist the abuse of another soul that is corrupted, that wants you to be corrupted, trying to make you a clone. And so all you have around you is people who are dark, twisted themselves, even though they don't want to be twisted. They're like you. They're not any different than you are. They're lost like you are, in a manner of speaking.
Right.
See, so.
Some more, some less.
So, some more, some less, yes. And so, but you're still geared in a wrong way with each other. The authority that you both need is not present to bring you back to your sensibility, where sensibility is in command rather than sensuality, the emotional self. Other people have got your head, soul, through your physical reactions to things because you're born subject to the environment in the beginning and is not yet fully strong enough to deal with authorities that precede you that are not as fruitcakes. See? And they have no tolerance for your little bright spirit that looks at them. That kind of... And you don't know when you're a little child that you really know more than everybody. You know more than the scientists. Simply because you know that you know. Just like Jessica says, well, several people said it. I can't remember who said it, but when they were 5 or 6 years old, where is he?
Right here.
There you are. You saw it, you and Jessica. You saw that people were nuts. Yeah. And you said, well, what am I doing here? Why is the world so crazy? And then they're able to get to you. Because first of all, they made you doubt yourself. And then when that happened, you lost faith.
I was gone.
You were gone. And then the power of God to your spirit, that gave you the bright spirit, that got transferred. Your soul fell into your thinking, into your emotions. And your emotions were like a vortex. They drew you in and they talked to you. The emotions of people, the look, the feel, the smell, the color, you know, the rudeness, the language. It came up inside you and it talks to you. And then it metamorphoses into a spirit of doubt.
See, another way to to say that is that there's conscious resistance, so there's conscious holding back, but there's a whole lot of programming that you're going through where you learn to give the environment what it wants. I mean, you just unconsciously
can't help it.
You learn the moves. It's a reciprocation.
Yeah, you can't help
it. And so you get caught up in that, and you that's where you lose your soul.
But staying on that vein, mm-hmm. she seems to like this. Now, I don't want anyone to feel offended by what I'm about to say, because I don't want to hold myself out as something extra special. But I said yesterday that you have to be more than human. That human isn't human. But, I mean, if we're from the primordial slime, all we can do is become better and better animals and more cunning animals, but there is no conscience. And the conscience we have will evolve on the top of that, but it won't be from God. It would be like you just become a more cunning beast. See? I don't think consciousness is something separate from the world. It's non-worldly. It's what made the world. That's what makes us different. And also it remakes us. So in your therapy, and I think we've discussed it before, George, that you have to be a sensible being rather than a sensual being. And to the degree that you, as a therapist, can give up your own links, I mean, your own little sensuous pleasures that nurture the whole of what's wrong, as you break those links, you shine like that little child again, no matter how old you are. You saw Ronald Reagan? What do you look about Ronald Reagan? He was shining through that camera. There was something about him that was not like other people.
It's called love, isn't it?
Yeah. But the point is, he didn't look old. He was just like a kid. But don't mess with him. Don't mess with him.
That was beautiful when you were talking to him about your child being able to talk to his child, that soul thing.
Yeah.
If someone would have grabbed me when I was young and talked to me like that, rather than talking down to me, but talking directly to the hurt little child,
yeah,
I could have escaped a lot of it.
Yes, and that's, you notice when little Andrew was sitting there, 5 years old, sitting there as confidently, all by himself. He says, what would you like to know? You know, and he can discuss things, but he does better when he's on his own and he starts seeing things like, Mother, would you turn that radio down? It's too loud. You can't hear God. That comes out like that, but he did the best he could. But he's totally confident.
Yeah, that's cool.
And when he talks, I talk to him exactly as he was a grown up. He's exactly equal to me. But he's not equal to me. He knows it, but he likes it. He responds to that. I'm not putting him up. I'm not putting him down. I'm talking straight across, and that's where you talk to the person. The little kid inside, that's how you reach him, and that's how you get respects for you, and the respect for you is me, Dad, is stronger than the world. And that's how you hold your children away from the world, because the world doesn't treat your child that way. So when he goes out in the world and they start to be rude to him, he doesn't understand that. See, I came from a family that was, my father was a good man, and my mother was lost a little bit, but good. A little bit spoiled, but no harm. So, and my brother is a lot different. My brother is a mean-spirited person. He's jealous because he thought my mother loved me more than him. Well, that was only because I was 13, 12, and therefore I had to be the breadwinner. So my mother looked to me for those things, you see. And he was just, he's almost 3 years younger than me, so naturally. But he would miss, his ego took that wrong. So he grew differently from me. We're not friends. He's very jealous, very educated. I put him through school. I took him everywhere. I don't know why I'm going through all this. I took him to South Africa with me. I went, cut my diamonds, and sent him to Witwatersrand University, and he got a degree. I have no degrees. So I made some sacrifice, but he doesn't appreciate the sacrifice. He feels humiliated by the sacrifice. He feels humility when you give him things. and help him. Does it? And you can't really help people who are egotistical and hateful of you and jealous. You can't even love your wife.
No, you got that?
You see?
Yeah, she was jealous of me.
Yeah. Really? So, I'm not nice to my wife. I'm not nice to her. I'm telling you right now. So, women are very offended when they hear that. Mm-hmm. I can't be nice to her.
I was offended many times when you talk about your wife.
Is it? Well, I do it all the time.
I know it.
I get really riles people. You know, I get a few notes every now and then. But you can't be nice to people if they don't know how to... But if you can just be yourself with people... But the trouble is, that is nice. See? I'm myself with George. I'm myself with you. I'm not trying to impress you. I want to help you. I want to get you to see things. I'm the same way with my wife, but she doesn't want to see things. She like you didn't want to. You want the world to revolve around you.
You
said this morning, I wanted him to support me.
Yes.
Well, we didn't talk about that yesterday. I said, you got it backwards. You're supposed to support him. You have the helpmate. You're not the center of the universe.
I see it.
That's the female thing in you. Center of the universe.
Yes, I see it now.
And then men fall into that because you help them to think they are. That you make them think they're the boss. He just thinks he's the boss. You're the boss maker, greater than the boss, right?
Yes.
He's not the boss without you thinking he's the boss.
Even my daughter sent a card for Father's Day. You have a boss, but you know who is the boss in the house.
See that?
My kids knew that.
See that? Look how much phoniness there has been in you in all your life.
I didn't know.
All those manipulations. I said, no wonder your husband's a shrimp.
His mother, maybe, who made him a shrimp.
I know, but you picked a shrimp so you could dominate
him. And his father was a boxer, you know, a Russian boxer, you know.
But you married him because he was weak. You tell me he's strong. He's only strong because you see him as strong. Because you want to see him as strong. But it's not true. He's not strong.
Really?
No. Otherwise, he'd kick your butt. He tries, but he doesn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
In my house, you wouldn't have got as far as you are now.
So this is why when you were talking about your wife on the radio, I say, can't he stop talking about his wife? Now I see why.
No.
Because it's me you're talking about.
My marriage is everybody's marriage.
Exactly, but I didn't see it myself until I come.
See?
Thank you.
And so long as she behaves the way she does, I'll keep using it and writing about it.
I'm going to hear it now.
A whole new meaning to muse.
See, though, so I get always the benefit. You never, a man, woman, I'm speaking from a man's point of view, never loses if he doesn't play the game. I got that, there was a movie called War Games. Remember that movie? At the end of the movie, it had a very nice, they had a runaway computer and it was playing war games, and some kids got hold of it, and the computer geeks, and they got the thing started and they couldn't stop it, and it was going to be the Russians against the Americans, but it was almost, the machine made it real because it was going to fire off the missiles and they couldn't stop it. And well, there was a tremendous amount of tension, and finally, they stopped the process. Then they asked the computer, I believe they asked the computer, how could we prevent this from happening in the future, supercomputer? And the computer says, the only way to win is not to play the game. And I hadn't forgotten that. I'm not sure if I've told the story correctly, but the point is made, see. But now I want to come back to the thing I was trying to say before about the sensual and about the therapist. Jesus had an authority which was not as the scribes. And you have an authority which is like, with all due respect, you're changing now, you're changing over. And so that's why I can talk this way. You had the authority of the scribes, you had a parchment. Well, but you didn't have the spirit at one time. See, now you are. And you see how much fun it is to have the spirit and the parchment. It's a great thing. you got a double force. I have no parchment. I just got a spirit, you see. So that you can go somewhere I can't go in community. But I've done rather well because all the parchment people are against me. The priests and the rabbis and the doctors and the psychiatrists and, you know, not all, because we've got two doctors here. You have the doctors with spirit understand me because they know that's what's missing in their lives. So to be a good doctor, you have to heal yourself. And doctor, heal thyself? Well, it doesn't mean heal physically. It means you got to get your head together. And you got to have that authority that doesn't come from a degree. But then imprecise sciences like psychiatry and psychology and medicine, which are somewhat imprecise. Medicine is precise in some ways when you're operating, but not in the understanding of what makes people ill. You see? What puts a rain check, rains on their behaviors themselves? Because then you wouldn't need a doctor as much. But you could do that if you put them in a golden cage, but then they hate you for that. You never cure it. See, you could make them get thin, but they'd hate you for, and they have other diseases that come from hate, even though they're thin and have a good diet. You see, but the thing is, you have to walk even amongst, if you're not a doctor, it doesn't matter whether you're a doctor or not, but in order to be a healer, that sensuous self must slowly dissolve, because people can feel, I can feel sensuousness. I can look at a person and see the sensuousness of that person. They have the look of sensuousness. They have the aura of sensuousness. Sometimes the smell of it. See? And it doesn't matter how much they perfume themselves and paint themselves. Can't hide it. As a matter of fact, it makes it more obvious. See? So you'd be more beautiful without makeup. See? If you were beautiful. Right. If you weren't fishing for guys.
Compensating for the lack of skills.
Sending out pheromones like the common animal. See? But then you won't be so attractive to men. Exactly. But then you won't have, and then you can never hope to dominate men, but you'll never be submissive to men, but you may never find a man that would like you the way you are as an innocent person. The only one you'd attract in that state is one that will use you or one you can use. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So
correct.
It cuts your chances down for ever getting married. So what? Am I making sense?
Yes.
You're better off like that than barefoot and pregnant and a whole bunch of kids, you know, and no money coming in and having all the frustrations and diseases and problems you don't know how to solve without a husband. Or have a lousy husband who beats everybody, which is what goes on like that.
Well, it kind of goes back to, you know, where I started that. Not a long time ago, allowed to be myself, and that whole thing of compensation that's run all throughout my life to the point where it made me feel like I couldn't even have it together enough to start my own business, be my own real person.
You burned out.
Yeah.
You're too pooped to pop.
Well, it's just like, it's like, it's a rut. I don't know where to go.
You don't have you've lost the natural spark that would carry you through life.
Yeah.
And it's all the way to eternity. Yes, you want to say something?
I don't know, just the phrase, the fields lie fallow, came to mind. Fields that should lie fallow.
Yes, yes.
Came to mind when she was talking, and sorry, it just spit right out of me.
It's all right. No. Is that it?
That was it. Yeah, just that the struggle, like when you find yourself struggling, that's the sign that you should be quiet and I can't say it.
But you are. Yeah, because yesterday you weren't here, but I can say it again, that you'll know that you found the secret of life. Not that you can give this to yourself, but know that would be that you'd found the secret of life when you can hold your head high, but not be arrogant, and love people, but not terribly like them too much, and disagree with people, but without being disagreeable. You see, and when people praise you, don't let it go to your head. Say thank you, I appreciate it, very nice. Acknowledge it. And when people damn you and degrade you, don't be downtrodden.
In talking to people here,
then you have that peace of mind in the sense that you have that something that comes through clean. Yeah.
So I'm talking to the people here. I'm finding that people are constantly saying they don't know when they know, and you know, you've just been programmed to say you don't know.
And I just can't say it. I feel like I can see it and feel it, but when I say it, I feel like I'm being disconnected from everybody when I say it.
But no, you're here. You're connecting to everybody.
Yeah, I have a hard time.
You said lie fallow. Is that the phrase?
To let the mind be fallow.
I mean, that sounds pretty
when you struggle, because I felt that many before what she's talking about. But I came across Krishnamurti when I was 17 and just turned my life around. So
yeah, he is a very intelligent man.
He just, I mean, really turned my life around.
That's good.
Yeah.
He had a place in Ojai, California.
I know.
And I was just down the street from him.
I know. I heard that.
And I went to see him one time. He had a crowd of hippies, mostly. Yeah. He didn't want to be, he was the kind of man that didn't want to be a leader. He didn't want followers.
That's what I loved about him. That's what turned me around.
But he had followers.
Yeah, that didn't bother me.
You know why that? Because he didn't have, look at my followers. Look, I got lots of them. Look. A ragged bunch of space travelers here. Going where no one never been before. See what it is. He lacked the knowledge to free the people. He had this brilliant knowledge. But yet he'd missed the Christian I'm Jewish, as you know, but Judaism is a system of deeds. And then Buddhism would be a system of wisdoms of the forefathers and the sayings, and you look very wise. See? But there's no spirit. And it looks good on the surface. It's the study of peace. Always being at peace. But they don't know what peace is. It's just getting along with everybody. And it's the science of happiness. But they don't have any. That's all they've got is a science of. They don't have anything. They don't produce anything. They don't make airplanes. They don't make it. All they have is a science of happiness. And the Dalai Lama, was Buddhist, isn't it? Buddhist? Yeah. Dalai Lama. He ruled over a people who loved peace. And then the Japanese came and took it away. And he ran like hell. Because there's no courage. He's running around talking about peace and lost his own country. What happened to the people left behind? No, there's peace is, if I may speak about peace now, I'm at peace with myself, but I'm always at war with the world. I mean, see, I have a thing, as you welcome into my world, welcome into my space, but don't get into my space. See? Because, well, I like Ronald Reagan, he was a real Christian. A Buddhist is not like that. He's carefree, fun-loving, childlike. He had something called faith that is not learned. Judaism is a learned thing. All the religions are learned behaviors. If you weren't born there, you wouldn't be that. If you were Jewish, you would be a Muslim if you're born in the West Bank. See? So, what would you be if they let you be? That's what I try to be here, what I'm trying to accomplish here. And so, and you can see that. So, now we have to let go of all those, that facade, or the subservience, or the bullying, and getting other people to heal. So you're not any of those things. So when you walk in the world, you are the light that everybody isn't, or that they think they are. So the Christians don't like you. The Jewish people don't like me. The teachers don't like me because they're teaching kids instead of bringing forth the good. They don't even know the meaning of educare, which means to bring forth from within. Is that Latin or Greek? I can't remember. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, your comment about needing to talk, I'll say just inner child to inner child.
Yes.
Meaning the child of God.
Yes.
You know, who's sitting there obedient to the intuition and so forth. It made me think that to be truly kind to that inner child and everybody you meet, you have to be willing to be very strong with the false self.
Yes.
And a lot of the really degreed people around, the highfalutin ones, are the perfect embodiment of a false self.
Yes.
So their natural tendency is to get in the way of or in between someone like you.
Yes.
And other people.
Yeah.
And they may have, it's not dead totally, I don't believe it ever dies completely, but getting through to them is going to be awful hard.
And I've always said, being a former professional hypnotist that knows more about that than most people in the world today, because I spent my whole life understanding that, that if I wanted to conquer a country, I'd start at the universities where people have sacrificed their understanding for knowledge, which is the original sin.
Mm-hmm.
Pride sits on a throne of knowledge. And so then they feel like they're somebody. But those people will, you have to be aware of the intellectual. They're very dangerous. So I'm doing a program. I do 3 hours in the evening and 2 hours, three or four times a week in the daytime to a KSCO. You might even get the program on the internet from 12 to 2 in the afternoon, our time. And I'm just a guest host, sometimes on the telephone, sometimes on a studio quality line. And I keep saying, I want to be able to lecture at California Santa Cruz University to all those kids there and show them how they've been brainwashed. And I said, I'm almost 80 years old. I don't need an entourage of protection. Let them bring their tomatoes and eggs. And bring some photographers. And let me show you what I do with them. And so I keep saying that I'm trying to stir up the challenging the professors and the students of that school to see if they can deal with me. They won't be able to.
I was going to say on the topic of education, what you're talking about, my whole life, I mean, I was always the smartest kid in class, and I went to the parochial school. I always got the A's and scholarships to high schools and so forth. And everything, and I see now that I've been running with my brakes on, taking input from all these higher educational places, knowing deep down in my heart that something's not right, and all my potential has been stifled.
Yes,
I was always the kid with, you know, I was going to
in many ways.
Yes, I can relate to a lot of what he says, and I mean, I even went to at one point I went to Columbia University. I was in the nuclear power program of the Navy. It was intense physics and calculus and all that stuff. I was going to operate a nuclear power sub. And I was compensating. Everything was out of... I'm realizing it now. Everything that I've ever done, I always would start something with huge potential, and somehow it would fizzle out. Now I'm realizing it's fizzling out because my good self was so in contrast with that where I was... The learning wasn't... from discovering was all these, I mean, at Columbia, I just left after 2 years. I said, these people are nuts. And people in my family said, you left that? I started selling encyclopedias. I love selling. And it was all those things that I learned, now I'm translating it into my business on the internet and stuff like that. For the first time in my life, in the last few years, since I had to fall down tremendously, everything fell apart. And now I'm solitary and I don't have bad influences around me. I'm just a hermit. And I mean, I do my, but I don't feel like a hermit. And
You're okay with yourself.
Yeah, sometimes I'll work like, you know, 10, 15 hours, and it'll be fun. I don't feel like I'm working. And things magic, just like you say, I mean, things I can never imagine. But this little business that I have is just like...
Good.
You know, and it's true. But they are nuts in the educational system. I mean, they'll drive you mad.
When you start something and it fizzles out, it's only because you're having conflict with it. Because you're driven by the wrong energy that's making you more of an animal than a person. So you may have a lot of knowledge, but you also have a lot of conflict. Because in with that knowledge comes the dark side of you, you see? A more responsive side to the world around you and authorities. Because you're not really authorities, you're just, well, the end product of original sin, of all the knowledge, you know, of the trees you can eat freely eat, but the knowledge were good. So I had a priest come to visit me one time in San Antonio. And I don't know if I told the story before, but if I have, some of you haven't heard it. And he's had all these perversions and problems. He said, I have a library full. I was on the radio in the evening, and I remember the timeline was, it was a baseball strike, so the station gave me, 50,000 watt station gave me the whole night to do show. So the lines were filled. But he heard it, comes down 200 miles. So I have a whole library of holy books and scriptures. I study this, and I'm getting worse. I said, that's the reason. The knowledge of good, knowledge of evil. You're street smart, that's the knowledge of evil. That'll get you somewhere. And the knowledge of good, but it's just as evil. That'll get you somewhere. Make the devil very happy. That doesn't mean to say that knowledge is bad. No. It's how you acquire it. So do you agree with it? So if I present knowledge to you, my knowledge is more geared to helping you divest yourself of your compulsion to think with it, to find answers in it. You see?
When you say knowledge of good, are you referring to
scripture,
the way of looking good, or what does that mean?
Well, knowledge of good is, for instance, a Christian would be studying the scripture to be approved. See, and the preacher is the Pharisee. He's encouraging more and more verses and chapters, so that you're studying your behavior isn't natural. It is programmed. And so what you've got is a facsimile of what is real, but you're a damn hypocrite because your whole life stinks.
Okay, this is the shell you've been...
Yeah. And so the soul your whole life is devoted in looking better and better and better and studying more and more and more and being somebody, but yet being nobody because you're not any use to God who made you.
And then comes the need for... drugs and stuff. I mean, I never did drugs, but I...
Conflict.
Conflict, yeah. So anything, whether it's a person, a member of the opposite sex, you know, in my case, I mean, going to the gym was a compensatory thing. I had all this anger and stuff.
You've got to release it.
Oh, yeah.
And become...
And you're saying this, well, I got to get this energy out, you know, not realizing how to deal with my thoughts and watch them.
But there's one thing I want to say before I forget it, that my friend here, is very educated. Couldn't use it. Didn't have the confidence. See? But now, he can put that knowledge to use. He could be anything he wanted. He could be anything that is shown that he should be. What will happen to you is whether you were going to be a lawyer or a physicist or whatever else you have. I think you have a multitude of skills that you haven't spoken about. This is wonderful. But whatever that is, that's still useful, even though you learned it the wrong way. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, it's a very fortunate thing that there are many transferable skills.
Yes,
from the ones you develop while you're compensating, for example, in one way or another, you can make use of those when you're healthy. You don't have to worry about losing them.
Sir. And of course, if you're a big, strong, handsome guy and lots of muscles. Schwarzenegger, yeah. But he had a brain on his head. So in the beginning, that was the compensation. But after a while, he became famous. It didn't go to his head so much. He seemed to become wise. And
I don't agree with everything he says, but the point is, it's nice to have a healthy governor or president that's masculine and strong and bright and muscular, you know, more manlike. It's helpful. There's nothing wrong with that, what he's done. He could put it all to use. It got him somewhere. See, it got him somewhere. And then when he was there, suddenly reality kicks in. And now he's not happy. He's gone as far as he can with being a movie star, but he's not happy. So he puts his, but still he's, like my diamond cutting. I wasn't happy with my diamond cutting. I ended up putting faces on people though. Polishing faces on people. It led me somewhere. It led me from one thing to another. And all of the things I've learned, the diamond cutting, I could say, well, I could forget it. But it gave me a good living. It gave me a presence, the ability to speak before groups and, see?
Roy, I've always thought of you as making us kind of a diamond in the rough.
Yes.
I've always thought of
that. Jesus is the carpenter.
Right. Yeah. Just kind of reshaping us like you
make
did diamonds.
Make you more beautiful.
Yeah.
Make you more beautiful. Yes, sir.
I called you 2 weeks ago, and I think it's related to what we're talking about, and I just want to explore it a little further.
Yes.
Because I'm an attorney, and in my profession, I don't enjoy what I do. The hours are very long.
I remember you.
And I'm ready for a change. But as I told you on the phone, that my life has been, I guess, directed and fueled by my will, and that I know that intuitively, or I believe that I need to know intuitively where I should be going next. And at the time we spoke, you encouraged me not to resent my job.
Yes.
Which I've been watching that.
Because you see, it could take you somewhere, and you may be fitted for being an attorney to defend the good, you know, the rights of people, not the wrongs of people. You know, there's always a side of attorneys that I never understand how you could know that someone's murdered someone, you have to defend them. I don't know how I could do that. But, you know, it's a mind spin.
I think they get pleasure from that somehow.
Some people would, wouldn't they? Some twisted attorneys would. But I can see how you might be in conflict with that. See? But the point is, I honestly can't tell you. I can only give you a vague, because it's vague to me. My own future is still vague. I kind of know where I'm going now. It's getting more solid. It's getting clearer. But in the beginning of a life, it is never clear. It's just seeing the next moment and trusting it. How do I say this? To make a foundation for what I want to tell you is that when you give your life over, you know, when the Christians use code language, you give your life over to Jesus, and you don't know where Jesus is. You see, that's what I say to the ministers. Where is he? He's not in the sky. He's not in the ocean. Where is he? So, otherwise, you just got verses and chapters, and that's where Jesus is. So, but when you have, I think George did the meditation. I think you've had a Catholic upbringing. Was that right?
No, Protestant.
Protestant. And you'd sort of abandoned it a long time ago. And then when we met and you read my book, Finding God in Physics a little bit, I remember you having some interesting experience. You know, your mind was spinning and
Well, it made sense after about meditating for about 3 years. I got my programming out of the way, and then I could begin to feel.
You could become religious now.
Yeah.
So even though he had rejected God and religion, and that's what psychiatrists tend to be that way.
Well, it's not so much you reject it, you need to prove it.
Yeah.
That's, you get into that.
But you can't prove it.
And then you can't prove it because you don't know how to know it.
Proof isn't faith. Anybody can believe something you can see. So you have to live by what you can't see. And so if you're God, if you're playing God, you're going to use the knowledge of good and evil to try to weigh one thing against the other to try to make your own life. And what are you doing is trying to make a world and you're the center of it. See? And so that doesn't work. See?
Meditation is knowing what you can't prove.
Yeah, but how it appears, when you woke up to that, you started to rely less on your own ambitions and your own decision-making processes. And you're setting your own goals as if you knew what those goals are. But when you set a goal, you're actually setting a goal in the distance and you move towards it. And when you move towards it, if it's your goal, ego, then you have, you look forward to it. It's exciting. It's interesting. But what you're really doing is looking away from the truth. And so in the hope of sort of becoming something, but that something is the truth itself, which you can't be. See? So when you get there, the journey towards it, that's actually a journey away. And when you get there, you have your nice car, you have your nice, your offices as a famous attorney, but you're not happy. And then you start drinking, or you try to become, you try to change professions. A lot of people change professions. Or a lot of people go crazy. Because who was Howard Hughes? He got cleverer and cleverer and cleverer and cleverer and bigger and bigger and bigger, smarter and smarter. But it's one massive conversation after another, and look how he ended up. Afraid of germs. He ended up, you know, beard, unkept, unshaven, broken.
And why can't you get to the point where you're like afraid to make goals?
You're afraid to do anything because everything you do gets worse and you can't understand it.
See, that's where I'm at.
That's it. So now we've got the better way. That your first part of your life, that's what you have to... Everybody has an ego and everybody does the same thing. Everybody goes through those same phases to varying degrees. Some get stuck and they're looking for truth, and some like where they are. They like being an attorney, a lot of money, important movie star, and they bask in it and they get sensuous and immoral, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they become ugly and die. See, drug addicted and die. But the soulful person senses is where he shouldn't be. And then he starts to look for truth, and a lot of people I know have gone to the Himalayas, India, searching for something. And a man wrote a book about me because he'd been everywhere. And the only place he ever heard it was, you know, on Western Avenue a long time ago. But he was at the seminar, a talk one of these last few weeks ago. And there's nowhere in the world they will talk about being true to yourself. But there's no path to it. See? So even though you want to be true to yourself, and when you have a path to it, it's a very strange thing because it's almost like you're stupid. I get the feeling like sometimes I'm really stupid.
Yeah. Feel it now.
But that's okay. I am stupid. Because I'm nothing. My intellect is nothing without, a guide. Something give me direction. I can't give myself my own motive, my own dream, and my own purpose, because that would be selfish. That's egotistic. So I have to serve something greater than myself. And if I don't, I end up thinking I'm serving my own purpose, but I'm serving the guy with the horns. You see, because there's only two forces at work. One is very clever, very stealthy. The serpent is the most subtle of all the creatures of the garden, and you know how subtle he can be and ties you up. Yes. Through other people, through your own struggle.
Yes.
You know, try harder. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, now I come back to the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
When you see that you can't use the knowledge of good and evil to make your own purpose,
mm-hmm.
and you get it, and you get frustrated, because frustration is the energy of the ego because you have no grace. You see? Grace is an energy, like graceful, effortless. So when you can get to that state and really understand, you feel settled. And you don't know why. You may even feel in the beginning when you come to a state of, as you're moving towards the light and dropping some of those links that made you comfortable, made you important. Dropping your judgments that puffed you up, that helped you allay the feelings of being judged upon by God. See, you're actually coming towards the light. You may actually feel guilty for not doing anything wrong. You have to survive that journey. It's like the prodigal son. As he approached the father's house, he felt guilty, almost turned back. But the father sees him from far off, the story goes, and meets him halfway. And that's why you can, that's why you can make it. Because otherwise we think we're not worthy of judgment. If I was God, you might think to yourself, he wouldn't accept me back again. So you judge God. It's for, you see, you're judging him. See, you don't understand God at all. But in your ego, you tend to judge God or think you can judge better than God because you don't know God or purpose. He doesn't speak to you in language. Mm-hmm. However, when you are settled in this, now you're an attorney. You got there. Now I'm a diamond cutter. Mm-hmm. But I'm not happy with that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not unhappy. I'm not resentful. So my mind is open. Mm-hmm. I'm not unhappy. I'm not conflicted. I do the job. I don't like it, but I don't hate it. It's what is given to me. It's my lot, temporarily. I know somehow I'm not going to be doing that always. And it's true. I go back to the factory 20 years later, and they're all sitting there. See? All the apprentices.
How do you know when it's time to change directions?
No, you don't. The direction will change itself. See, the direction... So if you can just be content that you're making a living, and maybe make less of a living because you take on different clients that are more honorable, you know, or something, so that you're not in conflict with, you know, defending the wicked, and let some other attorney do that, you know. So you may not make as much money as anybody else, but you're doing things now with a good purpose, because law does have a value.
My concern stems from being raised primarily in a church where people were very sincere, and we believed that we needed to seek God's will and not strike out on our own will. But so people didn't do anything.
They didn't do
anything. They were afraid to do the wrong thing, so they did nothing, but they floundered.
Ah, that's brilliant.
But they floundered. They weren't.
He's got it. See?
But I don't think they were doing God's will.
Well, yeah, they don't know. You see, the God's will is the yelling, the screaming of the yelling, and the seduction of the preacher. See, you don't know what God's will is, and you never will. He won't give you the whole plan. And if I'm going to business, I got a business plan. I ain't going to tell anybody else. I got some secret. I'm inventing something. I'm not going to tell everybody what I'm going to do, because otherwise people will stop me from doing it. I got to keep my secrets. This is a war we're fighting. So God's not going to tell you everything he's going to do. You can't handle it all. It's just too much. It's just a little at a time. And how does it come as a little at a time? When you are resigned and not worried about that you want to do what's right, but you don't know what it is, but you're willing to do it when it shows up. And then you don't worry about it.
So you think I'm just being impatient, maybe?
Yes. So you will see, if you could just be satisfied with your lot for the time being, and know that you don't know what your future is to be, but it may be this, what you're doing, blossoming into other things. Mm-hmm. Or it may be another thing, an opportunity that arises that you would have thought, you see where you wouldn't have seen if you were so narrowly focused on being a Christian, like it never goes anywhere, waiting for God's will. You see? Because if you do the right, if you are resigned to that quietly, you're at peace with yourself. You go through the day and nothing's upsetting you and disturbing you. Because you're grateful with what you have. Although you know there's something more for you, but you don't know what it is yet. But the kindness and the way you do things, I can't find another word which means opposite to taint. Can you give me a word that means opposite? It perfumes.
$3.
It perfumes what you do.
Perfect and purifies.
Purifies. Your law, knowledge, instead of having a taint to it, anger, frustration, all the rest of it, driving force, doing the best you can for your client, but not really knowing what best is. Because you see, it's compensation. There's a secret grudge and a secret motivation of anger and everything. But it becomes purified. And each person you touch, each thing you do, well, it has a different influence on people, places, and even material things. It has whether you turn left or right, and you don't know it. But one of those little decisions, one of those awarenesses of, oh, that, I see that. And, but what you see is you really don't have an option because you're in the process of being saved from making your own decisions. So since you're not lost in your thoughts, making your own decisions, and you're sort of at peace and enjoying your life, see, and there's a kindness thing, a new energy that makes you move and have your being a lawyer, being whatever you are, a new energy. It's called grace. People, it affects your work, it affects the jury, it affects the judge. If you're a street sweeper, people will stop and watch you sweeping the street. And they couldn't help but see a person working so effortlessly. There's something magical about it. See, and somebody might say, I could use that guy. See, I've never seen a person, I'm making something up, of course. I've never seen, they will see that in you. You're not just an ordinary street sweeper, but you start sweeping the streets. Whatever it is you do it so beautiful that it touches people. See?
Roy, I actually knew someone like that.
No. Yeah, but hold it, because I've got to go. I'm on a roll. Can you forgive me?
This is the end of CD 1.